Hi, everyone. Welcome to Waste 360's Nothing Wasted podcast. On every episode, we invite the most interesting people in waste, recycling, and organics to sit down with us and chat candidly about their thoughts, their work, this unique industry, and so much more. So thanks for listening and enjoy this episode.
For those of you that don't know me, my name is Don Ross. And I'm the vice president of sales for New Way Trucks. I'm also the chairman of the National Waste and Recycling Association's Board of Trustees. We're going to, first I'm going to ask each one of these guys to spend just a couple minutes and tell you why it's important that they're here today. What value alternative fuels, you know, is bringing to their customers. Briefly tell you about, you know, where they're at individually in their journey for alternative fuels. And then we're going to get into kind of a three-question piece where we're going to talk about three chapters, and we're going to hit them each with individual questions. Questions I think that'll answer a lot of your questions, and then we're going to open it up to the floor. We're going to have a mic runner in here in a little while, and we'll be able to field some questions. And, you know, there is no tight agenda here. There is no topic-specific stuff. You know, when we say alternative fuels, we're talking big picture. That's everything from RNG, CNG, electric, hydrogen fuel cell, you know, any and all things. Nothing's off limits today. So I really encourage everyone to ask questions. You know, like I said, we've got a great group of people here. You know, so I'll start off, like I said, Mike Fernandez, Miami-Dade County. Mike, give a quick couple minute real quick on you, your role, and you know, why you think it's important to be here today.
Okay.
And not just because I said you told you to come.
Oh, I was going to say that. Good morning, everyone. Mike Fernandez, director for the Department of Solid Waste Management. I'm sure many of you know us down there, other than South Beach and the temperature, 95 degrees, and we're coming here to 59 now. So, anyways, we're an integrated, fully integrated solid waste system down there. We do our own collection. We have our own transfer station. We have our own tractor trailers. We have a fleet of about 600, just over 600, about 600 vehicles, heavy equipment on the road. So why it's important on using alternative fuels, because, I mean, has anybody seen the price of diesel lately?
Yeah.
Right? It's, I think, at least 30, 40% higher than it was maybe a year ago. So yeah, that's the reason why alternative fuels are important. We got to look at other solutions to help reduce those operating costs and help have a more sustainable future. You know, on top of costs, obviously, then you want more sustainable solutions to the environment, climate change, all that good stuff. So that's why I think it's important for alternative fuels, at least look at alternative fuels.
That's great. Thanks, Mike. Sitting next to Mike is George Fotopoulos. George is the vice president of e-mobility's business unit for Mack Trucks. George, tell us a little bit about it.
Good morning, everybody. Again, as Don said, I'm responsible here for the Mack Trucks e-mobility business unit. And nice to meet you all here today. Hope for a nice, lively exchange. And as far as the key takeaways for myself today, I think we're in this stage. It's been coined the messy middle, right? Where we're exploring here various electrical alternatives, but other, of course, zero emission type of alternative technologies for powertrain. And there is no doubt in my mind, of course, I work in the mobility side of the things, but the battery electric vehicle will be the technology and the powertrain technology of choice when it comes to this refuse replication. And why do I think that? Well, it's actually a very well married technology to the actual route characteristics. You know, you have the whole stop and go, you have the return to home every night, and then obviously you have the ability to charge when you return home every night, and it's relatively short distances in comparison to other transport, heavy-duty transport sectors, right? So yes, this is my belief, and it's going to happen within this decade, will be a dominant technology in the powertrain side. And when it comes to the Mack truck side of things, you know, our slogan that we have on the side of our ride and drive that we have outside here today, the truck of the tomorrow is on the job today. So we are ready when everybody else is ready, when everybody else wants to come to the table today. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks, George. So next to George is Mark DeSchmidt. Mark is the vice president of ACX Refuse for Autocar.
Hello, everybody. You know, we're going into a very unknown area. We don't know what's coming. I think anybody who predicts that this is definitely what's going to be the only solution is going to be challenged into that. So we're looking at taking a very broad look at what's happening. If you look at from legislation levels, you can see that there's really only two technologies that are really being pushed out legislatively, both zero emissions, and that's hydrogen and battery electric. And as you mentioned, you know, battery electric has got its applications. I think there's going to be some challenges in the really, really hard, the long, hard routes where you either load in very heavy or you've got a very geographically challenged, you know, where you've got to go up and down mountains. And batteries are going to struggle in that, but technology is changing, it's moving forward, and as that gets better and better, that gap is going to close up.
Fantastic. Thanks, Mark. Next to Mark is our other end user. That's Scott Schultz. Scott's the general manager of Green Waste in Palo Alto. Scott?
Hi, everybody. First, I'm here to say that alternative fuels will work. A lot of haulers want to find reasons why they won't work. But they will. It just takes smart implementation, planning, good relationship with the public entity that you provide service for, but it's all possible. I've been at Green Waste, we've been the hauler for Palo Alto since 2009. We've had the luxury to implement new technologies and new approaches to collection, mandatory composting in 2016, we moved to CNG for our fleet in 2015 through 2017, and we've been rolling out electric trucks since 2018. We have four on route every day. They work, and we are looking to add three more within the next year and be fully electric in 2030. So before Green Waste, I was part of in the digital mapping world way back in the 90s, and on ITS America and doing some work on autonomous driving. And back then, you know, that was also something that was never gonna happen, never gonna work. But it's here, it works, it's great for carbon emissions, and there's a lot of upside to moving to different fuels. So that's all I have to say.
Awesome, thanks Scott, appreciate that. Last certainly but not least is Mike Patterson, founder and CEO of Battle Motors. You may recall a company called Crane Carrier. Battle Motors recently acquired Crane. So, Mike?
Hi, I'm Mike Patterson. Thanks for coming. Thanks, Don, for the invite. And nice to meet you guys. The why is for the environment, right? That's why I'm in the business. Anyone else here from California, LA area? Anyone? All right. For some reason, there's a little bit of smut or smoke on your car every morning, okay? It's horrible in California. It is. There, something has to be done. And then what you find is, okay, that it's actually a great ride, okay? So I'm doing it for the environment, but the customers who don't necessarily want to do it for the environment get their hands on a couple of these vehicles, okay, and they want more. It's a great ride. It's, as George mentioned, absolutely perfect for refuse. One of the big myths is that these refuse trucks go 200, 300 miles a day. No way. We've done tests with everybody. They go 60 miles a day on average. It's about 60. And you know, with even a smaller pack, like a 240 kilowatt hour pack, you can easily have 40% of your pack left in the can after finishing a route. It is being very rapidly adopted in California with HVIP, slowly coming along in New York, okay, where there's vouchers also, but a great technology. And I look forward to discussing that.
That's perfect. Thanks, Mike, for that introduction. Thanks, everybody, for that introduction. So let's get into the meat of it, right? So our first chapter, we're going to cover why alternative fuels now. And I'm going to start with Mike again, Patterson. Mike, why are your customers buying EVs? Is it a desire to help the environment, or is it about the mandates? What is it?
It's about the mandates in California. I mean, like that's where we're selling most of the vehicles in California. Also in New York, as I mentioned, it's the mandates. There's great vouchers available up to $125,000 in California, up to $185,000 in New York. And then it gets back to the ride, kind of like what I talked about right before. They're buying for the mandates. Unless you're a utility companies are buying it just because it makes a lot of sense for their business model. Our trucks are also very, very popular in the utility space with, you know, diggers, bucket trucks, and things like that. So there you go.
Perfect. I'm gonna stay with manufacturers real quick. I'm gonna jump to George. George, you know, Mac, as an OEM truck and, you know, proprietary powertrain producer. You know, what do you and Max see as the key drivers getting away from diesel?
Key driver getting away from diesel. I want to first start by saying, Don, that we're not stepping away from diesel quite yet, right? It's the majority of our business today, so there is definitely a roadway ahead of it for itself for diesel technology. But some of the key drivers there in regards to why stepping away from diesel eventually is I'll start with the people and the planet. Going back a little bit to what Mike was saying, we're humans, right? We need oxygen. We like to breathe clean air. On the planetary side, I'm talking about the green value of obviously the sustainability value, right? This whole thing called climate change, global warming, doesn't feel like that outside today, but it's a real thing and it's not a good thing, it's a bad thing. But some of the other key drivers are actually in the space of the technology. The technology is ready to be used in heavy duty transportation application, specifically refuse, being that shorter distance is what we described before. And then, as mentioned as well, policy and regulations, it's going that way. It's clear. Zero efficient, you know, ZEV, not any other alternative. It's zero emission vehicles is the policy and the way it's going. That's for sure. And then finally, I'll also say that the customers, and I'm not talking about our customers, but it's the customers' customers. So mayors, cities, they want their waste picked up with clean transport solutions. So cleaning up their cities two ways, obviously picking up the waste, but also doing it in a clean way.
Gotcha. So, George, you know, you made a point, ZEV. It's any technology that gets us to ZEV, or?
Sure. Obviously, one's going to win out over another. Mm-hmm. There's various technologies to accomplish that, and there's various applications maybe for different technologies to have a space in. But, yeah, the goal is to go zero emission vehicles. Absolutely.
Perfect. Okay. So, same thought. Let's move to Scott as an end user. Scott, we talk about why alternative fuels now. From your perspective, you know, what are realistic timeframes and challenges to implement alternate fuels fleet-wide now? What does now mean? Because I heard you in your introduction say 2030. Is that where you're headed? You're going to do it sooner? You know, why now?
Yeah, you say why now. It's, well, one, why not now? But also, what is now? We've been trying to do this for the last 4 years. You know, Palo Alto has a zero waste plan where they want to be fully electric by 2030, and we are going to make that happen. We're partnering with them. The funding is there, which obviously helps a lot. The challenges are, from my perspective, we felt like the original challenges would be, can this truck do the route? And we've proven that it can. Every day it goes out. There are different challenges. Infrastructure is huge. That was something that I wasn't quite aware of, how big that would be, what the cost would be. I'm not an electrical engineer or an electrician, and what power you need coming in. So you definitely need help on that side from a hauler. Also, there are grants available for that. So it's just it's a big effort. We've partnered up with Rivian to help us get there. And we're working on a yard now. So there's a lot of challenges. How many miles you drive on route, maybe lower, but if you're 10 miles away, 20 miles away from where you dump your material, is it freeway time? So there's a lot of challenges. I'd say we're gonna get there before 2030. We're gonna have all of the residential MSW picked up in Palo Alto by zero emission vehicles by 2025. And then we're going to sort of phase it in. We're going to go through phased approaches, which I think is a key in this. You have to phase everything in and get to your goal, set a goal, get to it. But you can't do it overnight. It takes a lot of time and a lot of planning.
Okay, terrific.
Hey, can I comment on that a little
please.
Bit?
Yeah, please.
I mean, agreed. So we have just about four or five major cities in Southern California who have bought electric refuse trucks with us. A lot of times we partner up with Newway.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? Mm-hmm. And you don't have to jump. If you got a fleet of 400, you don't have to, you know, jump in with 100. I mean, a lot of our purchases are, you know, 10, 5, but you can do this now. We got orders just yesterday in a couple counties, and we are delivering the trucks to Newway, mm-hmm, as well in September. And I think, you know, they'll turn them around maybe by the end of the year, first quarter.
Yeah.
It's not something that you have to wait for. And there's vouchers available now still on HVIP. And to address the charging a little bit, if you're going to start with one or you're going to start with five and you have 220 even at your shop or at the garage, right? We deliver over a charger in every truck. It's a small 80 amp charger, but what it'll do is, number one, you can connect it in about 15 minutes. And then what it's going to do, it's going to charge your vehicle to 80% overnight. So you can start using it immediately. So it's nothing you need to wait for. If you want to get your feet wet, you can do it now. Also, a little promotion here, but with Battle Motors, we deliver a plan that you can give your fleet manager or your mayor to say, okay, we're going to start with five. Here's 10 that we're picking up next year. Now we're going to measure the ROI on it. We're going to see what kind of battery life we need for our vehicles. And we're going to do a little study while we're doing a pilot. But my point is, you can start now, and Battle Motors has trucks now, and New Way has bodies, so there you go.
Mike, thanks for that plug. I appreciate it. That's a good point. You can start right away. I mean, we've put together probably 15 or 20, ZEVs, probably in the last 3 years. They're on the route every day. They're running. They're out there. We're collecting data. You know, this stuff's happening. I will say, every chassis we get is better than the last chassis. Technology is evolving very, very quickly. I kind of liken the evolution of electric trucks to what happened with CNG, right? So the CNG path today, it's very robust technology. It's working every day. A whole bunch of people have it. The trucks are cleaner, et cetera. But think back 25 years when CNG started. It was a rocky road. We burned pistons. We did a whole bunch of stuff. We couldn't run them in cold climates. We had to spend, millions and millions of dollars on fuel systems. We couldn't get the trucks full. We couldn't measure the range. I mean, there was a whole bunch of weaknesses in that system, but now it's bulletproof. It took us 20, 25 years to get there. This EV thing, I think it's 5 years full-scale adoption in our industry because of the lessons learned from previous technology. So, it's fast track, and I'm really excited about what might be after, EV, or what does EV look like? Is it always battery? Is it hydrogen cell? I don't know those things yet, but I appreciate that. We're working with each one of these guys. We've got EVs on the road with each one of these manufacturers. I'm going to switch to Mike Miami-Dade. I know we're catching you flat-footed here, Mike. Again, appreciate you being here. But, you've got a truck here at the show that's EV. I understand you might have heard a rumor there might be more on order going to Iowa. So we'll see. I'm teasing him. why? Why is the county doing it? Why do you have a truck here now? What are you trying to accomplish? We talked about your waste energy plant yesterday. We talked about environmental justice. We talked about a bunch of stuff. So what's your plan?
So, yeah, I mean, like I mentioned earlier, we are a fully integrated system. We got the luxury of having a waste energy facility. We have our own power plant, right? I mean, the fuel's garbage, right? So we saw the synergy between the garbage truck picking up the garbage, taking it to a waste energy facility, reducing the waste, processing the waste, and then charging the truck with the same power from the waste. I mean, I think it's a great concept, and we've been selling that concept for a while, and I think it's all about the sustainability goals that we have in place. We're actually looking also, I mean, I haven't mentioned it, but at our landfills, see how we could get the gas and make electricity out of that and power our fleet there at those locations as well. So, I know we're talking about trucks, but I'm sure heavy equipment, yellow irons, things like that are going to start coming out electric in the future. I mean, I know they tried a hybrid version one time. When I think it was a Caterpillar tried a hybrid version, but I think electric is the future. Obviously, we've heard from the crowd. I mean, everybody has sustainable goals. I mean, 2030 was this gentleman here, and we all have goals. And I think we do have to do better for the planet. And I think this is a cleaner solution than traditional diesel, even though diesel has come a long way as well, right? I mean, not to bash diesel, but diesel's probably the cleanest it's been yet. Now with all the mandates of improving the diesel, the particulate matter coming out, and Regeneron and the DEF process. So our goal is to start with, if you haven't seen our truck, I mean, it's out here in the parking lot. I actually got to drive another electric vehicle yesterday. I think it was really cool. It's like an oversized golf cart just driving around, right? So it's really nice. It's very quiet. Has power. I think that was also a few years back was a controversy, right? All these trucks aren't going to make it up the hills and they're going to just die right there. So I'm a firm believer that we're going to transition our entire fleet in the future, I think. But I think you're right. I think there's hesitancy based on CNG and other past experiences. I mean, we have a few CNG trucks, some tractors that we've had for some time. Unfortunately, we missed the boat during that transition period where there was all this money for infrastructure to build your infrastructure, and the CNG vehicles were obviously more expensive. And then the fuel, when you had that comparison with the diesel cost when they dropped, it really didn't make sense at that point to really transition all the way through CNG other than really the environmental factor. But, you know, I'm a firm believer that anything that's sustainable has to be financially sustainable and environmentally sustainable too, because, I mean, you could do all this, and if you don't have the financials to support that additional cost, it's dead in the water. You're not going to go much. You're not going to go far. But, yeah, since we have a waste to energy, and I encourage others to look at this that have a waste to energy facility, look at it. You have a power plant. At the end of the day, it's a power plant. Power your trucks with it. Power your equipment. But yeah, we will be transitioning in the future after we're piloting a few trucks and different manufacturers. We want to like explore everything and really take a hard look to see what direction we had to.
If I could just add on to that, we in Palo Alto we do take the collect the food scraps, take it to our anaerobic digestion facility in San Jose, and then we're close to finalizing a deal with the city to then buy that power back from us and, in a sense, use it to charge our trucks. So we're close.
That's awesome. That's great. So, you know, I've done, in the last three years, a bunch of these alternative fuels things. And, you know, to hear what those guys just described, I call sexy. And people go, well, Don, I don't want to really know what your definition of sexy is. But
we're bringing sexy back? Is that what we're doing?
We're bringing sexy back. You know, 35 years in the industry, you know, I find that very sexy that we can pick up garbage during the day. We can, you know, take it to a waste energy facility and we can charge our trucks overnight. That's truly closing the loop. I find that very sexy. So thanks for that.
So, you know, I always believe you go and make things personal, right? I have a farm, and carrying power tools around, you always carry a quarter tool around. You got a lugger generator to go and fix your fence so you can plug your drill in. And I said, you know, battery electric, these stupid tools will never last. The batteries won't last. You don't have enough power. Today, I will not buy a tool that's not battery electric. I won't do it. Think of you guys who work with tools. Why? Every saw, every drill, everything that you can buy with a cord, you can buy without a cord. And I can carry it anywhere on my farm, and I have a spare battery. I change out the battery, and I carry on going. It lasts me usually a whole day. A chainsaw, I got an electric chainsaw. It works way better than the gas chainsaw. And if anything goes wrong, I swap out the battery and I carry on going. It's just amazing. Weed whacker. Who's got an electric weed whacker? Electric weed whacker. Why do you want a gas one?
I keep cutting the cord.
Trucks are going to be exactly the same. It's going to come. It'll come quickly and it will change. And it will change the way we live.
It's a paradigm shift, not to use a 90s term, but it really is. I mean, it's a shift in paradigms. It's a shift in way we think. Mike, come back to you. So we heard 2030 from Scott. We heard within the next decade from George. Do you have a goal?
We do have a goal. Our goal is later on. It's an aspirational goal. It's really it's probably closer to more like 2040, 2050 in that area there. But there is a goal to reduce emissions. Obviously, sea level rise is a big thing down in, I mean, I'm sure you see Miami Beach is always flooded down there and it's like disappearing. But yeah, we do have that goal. And not only from just a vehicle perspective, but also, you know, reducing all sorts of other emissions like methane gas and other emissions that come from our at least solid waste facilities. But from a county perspective, yeah, I mean, our buses are going to be transitioning to electric. They actually mostly all are CNG right now, so they want to make that transition over to electric. But yeah, it's in the range of about 24, 2050.
Okay, good deal. All right, shifting gears, chapter two. It's kind of the next step in the evolution. So, you know, the general chapter, where do we see alternative fuel technology going from here? I'm going to start with Scott at Green Waste. And you know, Scott, hey, there's a bunch of haulers in the room here. You know, from your perspective, you know, short-term, mid-term, longer-term technologies and fuels, what are you thinking? And what's realistic 5, 10, 15 years?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I will say, and I know we're going to have questions later, but there are downsides, hurdles to overcome. I know it's a pretty rosy picture we're painting up here, but there are a lot of challenges from drivers to cities to what we can go through some of those later. But I think that, you know,
5, 10, 15 years. Yeah. Technology.
I think we can get there in 5 years to be fully electric, fully zero emission. I think we've done some research on hydrogen, and from my side, I think it's intriguing, but it's a little behind where we're at with what's available with electric. And, you know, I think by 10 years, absolutely, I would see, I don't think there would be any reason why we would need diesel trucks on the road in 10 years. You know, could you transition? We run CNG. We switched over from CNG to diesel. That was pretty seamless. No problem at all. And there's been a little bumpier with the diesel over to electric. But I think that's because, like you mentioned earlier, the technologies are just improving monthly, annually. And we were pretty early in that. So what we're seeing with our new deliveries is just exponentially, you know, greater than what we have 2 years ago. So I think, you know, you don't need to set a 2040, 2045 timeline. I think it could be done a lot earlier. But I understand the reasons why those are set. You want to make sure you can hit those goals. But I think those can be brought in as cities start, you know, moving towards that direction.
Yeah, so good. You know, so the follow-up thought of that is, you know, how do we integrate public and private sectors to make that move? And, you know, you talked about, you know, powering the grid and buying the power back. You know, can anybody do that who buys an EV? Or, you know, how do we get public sector more involved?
Yeah, I think I'm lucky enough to be in Palo Alto, where they're extremely forward thinking, and, you know, sustainability and environmental goals are top. So I think they're talking about no gas passenger cars in their city in a couple of years. So, you know, if you live there, you cannot have one. You can drive through. So, I mean, they're pretty forward thinking in that. I think that we've had the luxury of having Palo Alto help fund these projects, whether we're looking at gasifiers for certain material, looking at material to take dirty diapers to create energy from that then goes back in the grid. Palo Alto has their own utility company, so they buy the power back. So it's pretty seamless. I think it's a lot of education on the public sector to try to get them to understand and partner up with the private side. It has to be a public-private partnership to make this work. I don't think either side can fund it or actually get it done without that joint effort.
Gotcha. Yeah, you know, that brings me back a little bit. You know, we all hate, you know, government oversight and new regulations, stuff like that, but it really is, you know, government mandates and initiatives that force the private sector to develop and innovate and come up with new things. And we're very early in this technology, but, you know, you think back at all the different things. It was, you know, these were policies, these were mandates that were implemented, you know, Clean Air Act, you know, RECRA. I mean, I could go back, you know, and that forced a lot of different things in our industry. So as much as we hate government oversight and we hate mandates, those are really the things that kind of drive technology and get us thinking and innovating and coming up with new ideas. George, you know, Mack's a leading OEM with heavy trucks. You know, where do you see powertrain technology heading? And, you know, where's Mack spending their R&D money?
Yeah, I love what you said. Technology, it can solve a lot of things, including weed whackers and
go home and cut your lawn.
Chainsaws, right? Absolutely. I'll also say that Mack Trucks, we're part of the Volvo Group. And yes, we also do have yellow equipment when it comes to being able to electrify those equipment commercially available today. So it can match your Mack LR electric as well, right? So that's good. But the reason I say that we're part of the Volvo Group is technology, it takes money, it takes a lot of effort. And we spend annually $2 billion in R&D. $2 billion can do a lot of development, solve a lot of problems. So that's one of the benefits as far as that we have behind us in the Mack Trucks organization. If you looked at where we spent it 10 years ago, it was obviously within the regulations that you're mentioning, right? The oversight, the clean diesel technologies were obviously a big investment 10 years ago. And that pie had diesel, I'm looking at the powertrain pie of the R&D, right? Okay. It was very much invested 10 years ago into the internal combustion engine and the diesel regulations. And there was obviously a sliver with alternative fuels and battery electric vehicles as well. Now that sliver is dominated, right? Sure. If you look at it today, it looks actually like a pizza pie where there is three main areas on the powertrain technology. The obvious one that we're here talking about is battery electric technology. So that's a big slice of that pie. The other one is the fuel cell EV, right? So fuel cell EV, FCEV. And the other one is still in the ICE side, internal combustion engine. But we're talking about still clean diesel regulations that are still forthcoming here in this country and other countries around the world as well. But there's also investments within the internal combustion engine when it comes to utilizing hydrogen, when it comes to utilizing biofuels, and when it comes to utilizing natural gas as well. So sure. that investments are still happening. But those are the three main categories that we're spending that portion of that $2 billion annually.
So that pie has changed dramatically.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think back, you know, if everyone remembers that NOx chart that EPA would send out, you know, back in 2007, you know, the NOx was this. Yeah. You know, the NOx now is like all the way down here. You know, we had 07, we had 2010, we all cringed. It's like, oh no, here we go. We need another, we're going to tighten up emissions. And we had to put DEF on. And I mean, how many have there been? But, you know, we kind of give diesel a bad rap, but, you know, I think if Cummins was in the room, they'd tell you that, you know, the air coming out of the exhaust pipe is cleaner than the air going in right now in a clean diesel environment.
I was going to say that, and that's why I picked up the mic, but it's only in certain areas, right? If you're going into a tunnel, if you're in the middle of the forest, different story, don't be breathing in that exhaust fume, right? But,
Yeah. So, you know, we need to think about clean diesel and where that technology has come and evolved to. There's, you know, certainly goals to get away from fossil, and I understand all those things, you know, but I think it's, you know, I love to say that this industry is local. You know, we can talk about this at a national scale, but this is a very, very local business in every aspect that we do. And that comes down to equipment and what equipment works best in your local market area. So, you know, that's why we're talking about a whole bunch of different technologies here. Mr. Patterson, let's talk about cost. You know, everybody's like, well, how much does it cost, right? Can I get a grant? You know, all this kind of crazy stuff. And you know, you're focused on EV. And for those that don't know it, you know, Mike founded Romeo Battery. And you know, he's got some really great battery experience, but you know, do you see battery costs dropping in the near term, and you know, is it affordable?
Yeah, I mean, the cost of EV in California with $125,000 rebate or voucher is pretty close to the cost of a diesel.
Okay.
It's reasonable.
I have to live in California though, right?
Well, I mean, if you're in California, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, but, you know, what I think is super encouraging is that you can see Miami is doing this because it makes sense. And you can also see, and this is good if there's any reporters in here, this is not a blue or a red state kind of thing. You know, you look at New York, you look at California, you think we got vouchers, you look at Miami, hey, it makes sense. It's because it's a rational thing to do, right? It makes sense, right? And I think we're going to start seeing that more across. I'm from the Midwest. Our factories in the Midwest. We make a lot of diesel trucks. We're going to see more and more of an uptake in the Midwest. We're seeing a little bit now, but I think it's going to intensify if the price of diesel keeps going up, right?
Yeah.
And people see what you know, counties like Miami-Dade is doing.
Yeah. So I mean, it was a few years ago when you know, diesel prices were skyrocketing, where all of a sudden people were, you know, snapping up CNG like crazy and building stations because of that that delta. You know, not only was it a domestic fuel source, which we love to talk about, but you know, that price delta was huge between diesel and what CNG was. So, you know, there was an economic incentive to move that way. You know, this could be the perfect storm for EV with what's happening with fossil fuels right now. And Mike Fernandez, I'm going to catch you flat-footed or whatever, but you know, are you prepared for the cost of this stuff? And you know, I mean, can you pay for it?
Sure. So one of the things we did few years back, and when fuel prices were actually a lot cheaper, we analyzed all this. We analyzed maintenance costs. We did our own, you know, see what the ROI is on that, and it's promising. Let me tell you, we're halfway through the use of the truck. We're getting a return on investment using the power from the plant, not having to buy the power from the grid or anywhere else, using your power. So it made total sense. So yeah, it's a savings where we're going to reduce our operating costs by doing what we're going to do, by transitioning to this. The question is, can it work? I mean, does the truck really, you know, could it make the 60 miles, 70 miles? Could it stay out there on the route? So that's what we want to really evaluate now. On paper, financially, it makes sense.
Sure.
You know, operating costs. I mean, if we could reduce, however we could look at reducing our operating costs as well as helping the environment,
why not? I mean, it's a good cause. It's a good story.
Sure. So, yeah, I mean, I have some.
Could I add just?
Oh, please go.
Just one thing to both these guys said. I think it's important to speak to the cost and educate, you know, haulers and cities as to what the cost is, because I speak with cities weekly and I've heard, oh, this truck's going to cost me $800,000. Where, like what Mike said, I think the last one I just ordered was maybe 20,000 more than a diesel or CNG, but it was fairly insignificant when you're looking at that cost. The other side, though, is I do think that there needs to be some better understanding of how you get these grants, how you go through that process, whether it's from the manufacturer helping the end users. A lot of haulers don't necessarily have the time or the wherewithal to do this research and to apply for these and get it done, and the state hasn't made it the easiest to get these grants.
Okay, so let me ask.
Can I jump on that for a minute too? It's not just New York and California. There's 13 other states that have something out there. There's actually Volkswagen money still available out there, right?
Unbelievable.
So your dealer, okay, should know and be able to help you fill that paperwork out, okay? Or, you know, at Battle, you can go right online and you can find out and contact us, seriously, and we will tell you what's available, you know, wherever you are. Okay, there may be money available. There may be different things you have to do. You might have to turn in an old diesel in some cases, right? Crack the engine. But there might just be grant money. Doing a little bit of, just a little bit of homework, you know, you can save a lot of money.
Mike, and I want to just jump on that, but that's you mentioned something very important. I think it comes down to the manufacturers to help lobby this point at all these different, because every state is different. And yes, there is the VW grant money, but for instance, in the state of Florida, the VW grant specifically needs to be used for buses. It doesn't incorporate any refuse trucks. So I think that's a valid point. I think the manufacturers that manufacture these electric vehicles need to really spearhead that effort and get in there and change some of this legislation to help open the floodgates, basically to provide an incentive like what happened with CNG many years ago. There was that incentive to jump on CNG. It kind of helped, if I remember correctly, it helped with the infrastructure costs as well as buying the truck. I mean, there was an upcharge, I think about $35,000 a truck for CNG, and the fuel difference wasn't really that much, especially when diesel just dived down. It really didn't make sense at that point, but I think it's important for the manufacturers to spearhead that.
Yeah, I was just going to ask that question. Who is providing grant assistance? And George, you guys doing anything to?
Yeah, I was going to add this as well. Yes, and absolutely, the lobbying efforts are definitely there for sure. And the lobbying efforts are not just there for distribution of funds and making sure there's grants available in the right areas or across the nation, I would say, but it's also there to make it easy, right? Because some of them are difficult, right? So we're also lobbying on the make it easy kind of approach. And it's not pre-qualifying vehicles. Make it easy for the manufacturers and the customers as well. But also to go beyond the actual truck itself. Going back to the charging infrastructure, we talked about the difficulties, but there's also the cost associated with those as well, mm-hmm. which could be quite a bit of a nice amount as well. So, and yes, we also offer in our what we call our e-solutions on the Mack Truck side, obviously the support in regards to grant finding and also obviously the underwriting support as well through gotcha. Our dealers or through our corporate offices.
Perfect. Hey, I'm going to give a plug for the association here too. You know, we have lobbying efforts in Washington. We have lobbying efforts in all the state houses as well. You know, I think what we need to do is kind of unify that message and come up with the, you know, so we're telling the same story everywhere. And we need to do a better job of telling our story, the good story of this industry in each one of our state houses. So, you know, that's maybe something that we can help with from the NWRA perspective, working with our members to say, okay, what's the message? What should we be telling those folks? So I think we get behind that. Mark,
one more point. These incentives are not going to last forever.
Good point. Get them
so,
now.
So take advantage while they're still available, right?
Yeah. Yeah, fire sale. Mark, what about AutoCar? You guys doing any grant support?
Yeah, we do. So we've actually got a company, Vorza, who helps out with that. But you're still welcome to contact AutoCar. It's one of our sister companies. So between us and them, we are offering assistance for grants.
Staying with Mark. You know, Mark, where are we going from here regarding other green fuels and the next generation of this technology?
So I think that's the billion-dollar question, right? Look, I think the battery electric is already a given. We've all got them out there. We know that that is going to work. It'll work in probably the majority of the routes. Hydrogen fuel cells, I think, is going to come for those routes where battery electric just does not work.
And I'm taking a lot of cues actually from the transit bus industry. You know, they went with CNG, they went with battery electric, and they've now settled on a mixture between battery electric and hydrogen, where they've got the reserve trucks as hydrogen, so they could do any of the routes out there, but the majority of their routes done by battery electric. And I think that's also kind of driven from the legislation. You know, they've made it very, very clear. Zero emission vehicles means battery electric or hydrogen. There's not really many other choices other than the two of them. And bridging us, then you get your alternative fuels, your biodiesels, all of that. That will bridge us for a couple of years. It's better than what the fossil fuels are. But ultimately, we're going to end up with those battery electric, hydrogen, and maybe something which we haven't even thought about yet. You know, thermonuclear reactors, I don't know what that is. But that is very far ahead. Right now, it'll be one of those two technologies.
I'll jump in on and agree with Elon on a point. I don't agree with him on everything, but that hydrogen's a complete waste of time. Okay, don't make an investment. You might have already just made a CNG investment. Now you're making an EV investment. Okay, there's no real good use case. Okay, there's not. You can go that far with EV technology. Okay. Just my opinion.
My opinion.
My opinion.
This is opinion based, right? I mean, yeah. At the end of the day, it's going to be opinion. We don't know. If we knew, we would all be doing the same thing. So this is very much opinion based, and we can have different opinions. That's okay.
Yeah, that's good. Go ahead, George. Let's hear your opinion.
Obviously, I did mention that we are investing, of course, within hydrogen within our R&D funds, yeah. Right? But when it comes to that refuse transportation sector, battery electric vehicles the way to go.
Really. Why do you say that?
I kind of mentioned in the beginning, right? The characteristics of the route themselves. The technology is there today to do maybe not 100%, but you know, it will be there to do 100%. Today we might be at 50, whatever that number in the, put your thumb up in the air, grab, right? 50, 70% today. We're not at 100% of all use cases, but the technology is evolving within the battery, especially in the ESS, the energy storage system, right? It's coming fast and it'll be out at 100%, no doubt about it.
And we're not giving up too much payload or?
Oh, that's a trick, right? So you can give up payload, but you don't want to put a whole bunch of batteries on that because then that's the moneymaker for the customer, right? You got to put 10, 12 tons of trash in that thing, right? So yeah, we're not giving up payload.
I'd say Mac and Battle are doing it right and putting the battery where it belongs.
Perfect.
Right?
Auto car?
We got the batteries as well. I mean, it's going to work. There is no doubt the batteries will work. I'm not doubting that for a second. It's just what are those extra, the alternatives? What happens if you can't get the infrastructure? You're out somewhere in the mountains and the power supply is not going to be there for the next 10 years. What are you going to do? If you have to change to something and you cannot get electricity to your site, what do you do? And we're seeing it today, you know, the demos going out there. What happens if there's no charging facilities on site? Well, so I know you can get the small charges, but how do you do that for 20, 30 vehicles?
What happens when you have fires in California? You have blackouts everywhere.
God knows.
Yeah, or hurricane in Miami, and you don't have power for like a month.
Yeah, that's one of the challenges that we currently need to keep working on is even in Palo Alto, there's times where the rolling blackouts or there's, you know, it's powers out for a day, and we have to come up with a solution that's economical as well because of battery bank, $1 million, whatever it is. It's something we have to think about and do. Have generators that run on diesel that would that so
so fuel cell generators
so the solutions are out there, we just have to give it more thought.
And are the utilities, those that are going to depend on the grid, ready for that transition to everybody to like, especially in California, because I think right now you have to give up your gas powered lawnmowers and your weeders, so just send them to Florida, we'll take them. we need them there, but yeah, absolutely. Those are definitely challenges that we're gonna have to. The governments, utilities are gonna have to adapt to. I think they're looking forward to it because it's all money, revenue in their pocket. But can the infrastructure really hold true to that demand? And then is the cost gonna start rising for electricity now because there's a lot more demand for, and now these utilities are having to find these new ways of trying to produce this electricity, right? That's why I thought the story we thought down there in Miami-Dade, that the story of using your own power plant, just staying, you know, resilient, keep it going yourself, basically. I think it was a great idea, and looking at doing it with our landfills too. I think you're sustaining yourself basically on the garbage you pick up.
It's sexy, remember? It's sexy.
Sexy. We can play that music.
So there's also the scale, right? If you look at adoption, to do a couple of battery electric, to do 10, 20, 30, you're okay. When you're starting talking of hundreds or thousands of vehicles being added to the grid every day to charge, where's that electricity coming from? What is the infrastructure plan to support that, right? And so you do need some form of alternatives. I believe the end is going to be a mix of different technologies together, just because this one might not always be reliable, but you need something else to fill in on those gaps.
Mark, if you guys could figure out a way that the minute it goes in the hopper, you process and it powers itself, you guys will kill it right there.
So, you know, our president, you know, he always tells me he wants to be able to take a banana peel, dump it into the truck, and we go driving.
Like the DeLorean Back to the Future, just put in the Black & Decker and just make your own power, the flux capacitor.
What's a gigawatt? Well, I mean, we could ask the guy who owns a power plant here.
Ask Doc.
Yeah. I'm going to ask you. You own a power plant, right? What's your deal with Progress Energy or Duke? I mean, that all flipped down in Florida. I spent a lot of time down there. And, you know, is it better for you to power your trucks than sell the power? Or more importantly, how much garbage do you have to burn to power your fleet?
So right now, we did the math, and I think it was 400 kilowatts, I believe, for each vehicle, I think. But we generate, with this plant right now, we generate about 50 megawatts. So just do the math, I mean, and how many trucks we could charge with that, with the plant, right now, our current plant.
How many? I need someone to do the math.
Yeah, do the math. But it's about 100, I think it's about 100, maybe 150. Yeah, so we did the math. But this is our current plant. A future plant processing, right now we process about 1.2 million tons a year in that plant. A future plant, maybe another 4,000, 5,000 ton per day, we could get up to 130 megawatts with a mass burn facility. Right now we have an older RDF facility. So, I mean, the sky is the limit. I mean, we could really power a lot with a 130 megawatt plant just sending power. It doesn't make sense to send it to the grid. We get paid pretty much nothing. We call it as available power, basically. They just pay us maybe $20, $30 a megawatt. For our power, where we used to get $90,
and it changed.
And the utility sells it for about that price right now. So they buy it from us for $20, and they sell it for $90 to $100 a megawatt out there. Yeah, it's bad. So why not just not send them the power? Power ourselves and power other facilities with the power we're making. I mean, the difference in the savings from the retail, having to buy it retail, to what you're. I mean, it's. It's astronomical. I mean, we really, there's a savings there.
Well, I think if you just look at the infrastructure differences, right, you guys have got your own facility, so you've got the 100 plus vehicles. You're dependent on the grid. And so that infrastructure becomes the critical key into saying, how do I plan my way forward? You've got to understand your infrastructure. And from that infrastructure, you can do your plan to the vehicles, because the vehicles are available, but you've got to understand your infrastructure. You've got to know what's happening on your infrastructure.
Cool. Cool, that's great. All right, we're going to go to chapter 3. You guys have covered some of this stuff already, but let's get into a little bit deeper. Back to Mark. You know, what do you believe are the major challenges with alternative fuels that are unique to the refuse industry? So specific here, our business.
Yeah, so, you know, if you look just in general, and this is not, you can't not overcome it. I mean, it's already been overcome. If you look at it, electric vehicles in general, your battery electrics, you know, it's all about how much energy you have aboard. If you think of diesel, you've got energy in your diesel, which you are burning to release to do work with. With a battery electric, you've got a finite amount inside of there. And over the road vehicles, the cars and you know that we see on the road every day, you regenerate some of that. And that efficiency is what makes battery electric work, is that you can get some of that back again. With the refuse trucks, you're looking at your compactors, your bodies, your hydraulic systems, which is dead loss. That energy is used, and you can't really regain it. It's gone. And so your efficiency becomes really a little bit less than what you're getting on the vehicle. So you've got to build in a little bit. That's really different from what you have for most of your over-the-road applications. And the same thing is the start stops, right? You've got to have a really efficient powertrain to regenerate that energy, because you're not doing high-speed stops like an over-the-road truck. You're driving in traffic, you hit the brake, and you can regenerate a lot of that energy back in again. These start-stop routes, you really got to have a well-designed powertrain to be able to regenerate that energy, because it's slow speed that you're regenerating in. So, just a different
It's a unique environment. I mean, we're last-mile providers. And go ahead, Mike, I'm coming to you next.
Jump in and kind of echo something George said earlier. It is a great application, though, to get that regen, right? Especially you're picking up 800, 900 cans, right? Start and stopping. It does help. And we all know there are some truly electric, power, PTOs for hydraulics out there right now, right? But it goes back to, having software, being able to tune your regen to what actually works. Because if you've done it, you don't want to have too much regen. You don't want to be going down, going down a little bit of a hill, right, that's covered in ice, and have your regen kick in. Because guess what? It's not a beautiful, not a good situation. So it takes some tuning on the regen, right? And, what we suggest, because you can, as our CSO right over here does, we can dial up and dial down the regen, till you find that sweet spot. So,
so more manageable.
Yeah.
Okay. Awesome. Thanks. Mike, keep that mic in your hand there for a second. But you having challenges with vendors, specifically EV suppliers, internalizing manufacturing that you normally outsource?
We're all living it. I mean, there's problems pretty much with with everybody right now. I would say, look, it's kind of a shout out to Cummins on the diesel side, Allison, right, Dana, Meritor, who are really delivering, right, and I think now have gotten beyond their big supply chain issues or their COVID issues. It's the weird stuff. It's like the high voltage cables and stuff like that. That is a pain in the butt, right? Everyone in the world's having the problem. We've started making some of our own harnesses. We make our own battery racks. We wrote our own software so it'd be more efficient and we can update it and we can switch vendors. It's kind of nice because we do use multiple vendors for batteries. But if, for example, I couldn't get CATL batteries, right? I have the ability to upgrade the software and take out another vendor. So you got to be two or three deep. You got to work harder. And, as everyone's saying, it's not getting all that better, but it's not getting that much worse. It doesn't seem like, right? And some of the real players, are stepping up.
I think adding on to what you're saying, having your own software and the ability to change is as that new technology is coming out. So you can start upgrading and making use of that a lot quicker. You're not locked in. And so in this time, that flexibility is absolutely crucial.
So you guys are each talking about proprietary stuff. I mean, how does that impact the end user now? You may have a fleet of different trucks and everybody has their own proprietary software. And, is it going to matter? Is there ever going to be a standard? I mean,
there's standard. There are some just basic standards out there in the market right now that everyone works for with, but it's just kind of like if you're driving your electric car, there's probably an over-the-air update available, which we have, and I think you guys have, right? So if there is a fault, you see a fault code, on your truck, your fleet manager can see it. We can fix it remotely. So this country is really, really good at software, and most of the major players have really, really good operating systems. We all use probably the same VCU, right? So there are standards.
Okay.
But it gives us flexibility to with these EVs. A lot of people are upgrading their fleets, and they're adding other safety standards now too. I'm seeing ADAS is becoming pretty much standard. It's tied into the software in your truck, right? Which is then tied in with the body companies. So we're getting a much more sophisticated refuse vehicle, right? All of a sudden, as the EVs kick in. Right, which everyone appreciates.
Yeah, and I don't know about the other guys, but from a New Way perspective, we're working with each of these guys at a level of integration that's unheard of before. I mean, it really is a complete refuse unit. I mean, it's not a truck in a body anymore. We're completely integrated, in all levels of infrastructure, from mounting and framing and wiring to computers to CAN bus. I mean, it's really a lot. It's very complex, but the whole goal is to make a user-friendly unit that experiences less downtime for our end users. Kudos to our engineers, your engineers, for being able to create that level of integration. George, same question. What challenges do you see in the adoption to battery electric or ZEV?
Sure. We touched upon a lot of these topics throughout this panel, and I don't want to repeat the things that we talked about, but I'm going to dive in a little bit maybe into two areas. The one area being the green value, and I'm talking about the money green value here, right? So we've talked about incentives. But at the end of the day, the total cost of ownership is a little bit of a challenge.
What I'm saying that is without incentives.
Right.
Yeah.
Or, so or your own burn plant.
Exactly. <yeah. laughs> Correct. That's a good one too as well. That's an incentive in itself, right? But what I'm going to say is these vehicles, they last 10, 15 plus years. You will have a return on that investment at those later time in life. So it's not like it's you're not getting TCO. You are getting total cost of ownership and a return on that investment. But it's not having in favorable circumstances. Nobody wants to invest $1,000 and get a return on that $1,000 15 years from now, right? That's not very favorable. But with incentives, obviously, that is becoming much, much closer and much more pleasing as far as a return on investment, right? And over time, this is going to improve. So obviously, we do hear about it out there. The total cost of ownership is a challenge. I'm not going to touch upon the charging infrastructure side of things. I think we addressed it pretty good here on this panel as far as that challenge that's out there as well. I will say the other challenge is also a channel engagement. What I want me to say about this is there's naturally hesitation when it comes to any kind of technology shift in our industry specifically.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So that hesitation is definitely there in the industry. And then the final one is the vehicle technology translating to that whole vehicle performance that we talked about. Yes, on the refuse space, we can accompany 50, 60, 70% of the refuse routes today with the battery electric vehicle technology. But that is also, we want to be at 100%, right? So I can put it another way. You know, how do you put more kilowatt on the truck without affecting the payload, the cost, the real estate,
yeah,
right? Or how do you make more efficient use of the kilowatt that is on the truck? So going back to the technology factor.
Same kilowatt takes you further.
If a kilowatt could take you forever, that'd be great. But it doesn't. But
gotcha. Yeah, all right.
To make it go longer, right? To have a kilowatt make it go further, right? And one of the actual a decent power drain that we actually do get is obviously from the bodies, right? They pick up trash, the ASL applications. Mm-hmm. That all takes power and energy to accomplish the compactions and everything, sure. Right? So, Don, I'm going to, I guess, take this question and turn it a little bit onto yourself for being a body upfitter here. You know, what, no pun intended here, but what... new ways is new way. Looking at addressing a more efficient body.
Yeah, no, it's a great question. You know, our engineers work with you guys. You know, when we're going to do an upfit and we're gonna put an EV together, you know, the first thing they want to know is, hey, what kind of energy is it going to take to pack the load, to lift the cart, to, you know, lift the bin, those kinds of things. How many bin cycles are we doing? You know, and it all comes back to, hey, your mileage may vary, but what's happening on that route? What's that route design look like? And, you know, then we translate that data to say, okay, you know, we need to either move this much hydraulic oil or we need to, you know, turn this so far or do these kinds of things. And, you know, that we boil that down to, you know, what that works in a kilowatt hour to translate to say, hey, okay, this is the power available, right? Because we need the truck to go this far, you know. But we've also talked about, hey, does a body manufacturer need to bring his own power? And I think all of you guys have told me, no, you don't want me to put power on my body. We want this stuff to be compatible. We don't want to have to plug in the body and plug in the chassis. You know, you guys want to provide the power, and we're totally fine with that. You know, as we start to design, you know, everything from, you know, more efficient hydraulic bodies that work better with, you know, an electronic PTO, less sacrificial, you know, lag and things that might compromise, you know, the battery life and stuff like that. To, you know, hey, we've got electric bodies on the drawing board. You know, a lot of customers have said to us, hey, you know, we want you to do a fully electric body. You know, my first question has always been, well, why? You know, and everybody says, well, we ought to be greener. And I would say, okay, well, how does an electric body make you greener? And then we get into a whole long discussion about things, and you know, it usually circles back to me asking again, where's your power come from? Because, you know, for everyone in the room, you know, 40% of the power in the U.S. is still coming from coal-fired plants. So does it make sense to plug in an electric truck, you know, from power that's coming from a coal-fired burner? You know, I don't know the answers to those questions, but those are things that people need to explore in their own market areas. But, you know, your question, George, you know, we're working to try to be as efficient as possible to minimize the draw on your power systems. And we continue to perfect that. We continue to get better. We continue to work on our software and our programming. You know, hey, everybody loves, you know, drivers love to pack garbage. That's all they like to do, right? Always be packing was, you know, rule one when you're driving a garbage truck, you know, because you want to make sure you fit that last container on. But, you know, that's not necessarily the case anymore. I mean, I think, Scott, you know, we did that specifically on your stuff because, you know, we recognized that it was a recycling route. He was using 35-gallon carts. You know, we didn't need to sweep that hopper every single time.
You know, so our software adapted to what his need case was, which was different from another truck. Ocala, Florida has a different need case. And all these places where we've put these trucks, everybody has a different need case, and we adopt that programming. So every truck just doesn't roll out like the last one. We customize it to make sure we're maximizing the efficiency of these powertrains.
Yeah, so Don, you know, I believe there's really three pillars that this whole industry and this change to the electric vehicles rest on. You know, we call it the tool. You don't use a screwdriver to try and undo a bolt. You got to use a wrench, right? The tool has to fit what you need it to do. The mission, what route do you want it to go and do? Because it's going to be different every time. And then what infrastructure do you have available to support it? And you got to balance those three pillars, because they will always find a balance somewhere. And you need to understand each three. You need to find out exactly how it suits you. What is different between a diesel and electric? And then balance those three pillars.
Scott? Yeah. From the end user perspective, I'd say, and I'll preface this by saying, we were an early adopter. We had a very early unit back in 2017, an ASL, and it was not provided by any of these gentlemen up here. But, you know, I have 55 drivers, and when I have a driver going 57 miles an hour down 101 to go dump his load, and the whole truck just went off, nothing, no power, anything. For me to convince him to go back in that same truck again, no, that's not something I did, and I wouldn't do. And so we've had challenges. You know, my drivers, I had to look, you know, the ones that were eager to try this new technology and to troubleshoot it, we provided a lot of feedback to the manufacturer. The software side, you know, our maintenance costs easily down 35% on this truck. However, when the truck doesn't work, we don't know how to fix it, and someone has to come out with a laptop or send a laptop from China or a person from China to plug it in, and then he does something, and then the body doesn't necessarily work how it did. So the trucks we have been down more than, you know, probably 35, 40, 50% more than they should have been, you know, versus a diesel. But it has evolved. It's getting a lot better. We have a lot more confidence in the units that we're getting. And we knew it wasn't going to be easy, but we made the decision to go for it. And I, you know, commend my drivers who stuck with it. And safety is our highest priority, so we won't put a truck out if we don't feel comfortable that it's going to get them home safe.
Yeah, and, you know, hey, safety needs to be job one in our industry, because we know how dangerous it is. I'd like to leave a couple minutes for Q&A. We have a mic here. Either Matt or Sam, if you guys could, you know, maybe run the mic, that would be great. I guess you have to run to the mic.
That's all right. I'll go to the mic. This question is probably more for the manufacturers, but definitely the haulers as well. What's the plan for when we have a mass amount of EV batteries or vehicles? I do think that with regulations, that's where we're going to go with the batteries afterwards, because as a hauler, definitely electric batteries are a big concern to go into our landfill, to go into our trucks. So what's your plan for that?
Number one cause of fires, as I recall, I believe, is lithium-ion batteries. So really good question, guys. Yeah, afterlife.
Awesome. Yeah, awesome question. Excellent question. Thank you. What's the plan for it? There's actually several stages of it. And let me say, when the battery gets to a certain state of health on the vehicle itself, it's not spent, it's not done. You actually do recondition that battery and put it back on that vehicle itself. So there is a reuse of it there. After the battery gets another state of health that is even more detrimental than what it was when you refurbish it, at that point in time, you refurbish the battery, but you will put it in a second use case. It could be great on a solar farm, for instance, for redundancy back to when we have blackouts. So it could be used in those kind of applications. Also within chargers themselves, to have their own redundancy built in, so they'll have a battery pack in those chargers. So there's second life use cases for those batteries. And then finally, when they're spent fully there, and, you know, the state of health of that battery is no use being in a second use case any longer, this is where recycling. And the technology and the recycling of the batteries is huge. What I mean by that is you get over 90% back recycled out of that battery. And these components and those minerals that are in there, they're not inexpensive, right? So there's a very good business case there for recycling.
Please. That's dead on. So we've partnered with Heritage Environmental. I think they're a $20 billion company here, mm-hmm, in North America.
So when you do buy your truck, you can choose one of three options, which you can either put it back into factory reuse, because a lot of us, including Battle, are going for a green factory in the future, right, to power your factory. Or you could have it donated to a solar farm, okay? You can shred it, and as George said, you can reuse those components. But yeah, there's a lot of good second life uses.
Awesome. Questions?
David. Scott, this question's for you. You said that you do run a whole route, and it is successful. I bet all the haulers in here would like to know how many carts you actually pick up a day and how many miles you go, and what battery life do you have once that truck comes home?
We go about 35, 40 miles a day, average 850 carts, and usually when we return, the percent is about right around 30% left, 20 to 30.
Great question.
Hey guys, great presentations. Thanks for the insight. Wondering if you guys had an insight on which use case or duty cycle is best, or from a battery electric, which duty cycle lends itself most to battery electric? Is it, you know, commercial recycling, you know, residential? Is there any insight you guys could provide on that?
I'll go first.
Yeah. Dive in.
From our experience, very urban applications work wonderful. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, the distances are so much shorter at that point in time, and you get a lot of waste in a stop. Yep. Those tall skyscrapers have a lot of course garbage cans and bags there to pick up. Right. So that is the first one that I'll say is the more urban type of environment. The other one is the recycling side. Why? Simply because of weight. Yep. Right. I think that's the amount of power that it takes to pick up that can, to dump it on the side, and actually transfer it from point A to point B to point C to point D. So recycling routes are great as well, right? So those are the two that I'd like to highlight.
And for Palo Alto, it's the residential solid waste, because we don't have to do two loads a day, mm-hmm. so we're reducing the amount of miles driven. And, you know, it tends to be the lightest material. We have put 10 tons in that truck one time, but it usually averages about 6 tons. But it's really the drive time. We have to drive on the freeway to go dump, so all the other routes do two loads.
Okay. And one more question, if I may.
Please.
I'd like to hear more, George, about the vehicle as a service option that Mac rolled out. If you could talk about that, please.
Yeah, that's my baby. So, yes. So it is. It's a lease package, and it's not just leasing the truck, which we manufacture. And typically, we put that asset on our balance sheet, and we just get car manufacturer. They lease it out to a customer. But it's not just the truck, right? It's a full bundling of everything that you would need to go EV within the fleet. And therefore, it includes also leasing in that the body as well. So the body cost is associated and packaged into that vehicle as a service financial package. And then it goes even beyond that. Taxes can be included. Your incentives that you would get back from your local policies if you have incentives in your state. Also, the charging itself, it could be expensive, right? Those charges are not inexpensive. We would also bundle that into a lease payment. And then it goes even further beyond that. The charging infrastructure costs, if you'd actually have to put copper in the ground, we'll roll that into that lease package as well. And then finally, there was one more thing that I want to cover is obviously the maintenance, the servicing of the vehicle. So it's covered and it's all included in that lease package. So you can physically walk away with a truck and a full package to go EV within your fleet without having to put a single penny up front. Obviously, that's going to be maybe a monthly payment, because all those things cost a lot that is going to be quite maybe a little bit too high. But again, there's the ability to do that if you so choose to. Instead of making that investment up front, you obviously you take it in a monthly payment instead. So, yeah.
Great question. All right, so this is amazing. Can we give these guys a round of applause? I thought I knew something about this, but clearly I didn't know everything I thought I did. But if you could fill out the survey, we'd really appreciate it. Thanks, everybody, for coming. Have a great show.